Welcome to another edition of In the Know. I am your host, Tony Reeves. Today, we're going to continue our discussion about life after Jim Crow, where we focus on the 1970s and the 80s, which were the first generation of integration, as well as the first generation to fully benefit from the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, as well as the effects of Supreme Court cases like Brown v. Board of Education. And today, we're going to focus on teaching history. You know, history. History, which is a collective of stories, facts, and representations, which paints a portrait of the historical account of a person, place, or thing. As we all know, history is a crucial part of our educational experience and the foundation of our individual as well as our collective identity. And history is truth-telling. History not only tells us who we are and what we're capable, history also tells us where we came from, and equally important, the lessons that we should learn so we can't repeat them again. Now, everyone agrees history should be taught in order to get an understanding and an appreciation of our past and to teach us valuable lessons that can be applied to the future. However, history, and more importantly, teaching of history, has always been a touchy, tough debate. As a former adjunct professor, I understand the struggle with educating the masses regarding history. But here's three things that you need to be aware of, because teaching any topic typically comes down to three things. First, the source material. The source material like textbooks. Second, the curriculum. That means that whatever outlines what is being taught. And third, the educator, meaning the individual who is responsible for teaching the materials. Now, the educator is the easiest part, but their ability to educate is heavily reliant on the curriculum as well as the source material, which brings us to this point and presents a unique problem. Invariably, history is a huge topic with multiple points and details that can overwhelm. As such, over time, when preparing source materials and curriculum, a choice has to be made in terms of what information has to be presented. In other words, when you're looking at history, you're ultimately going to give an overview because there's so much information, especially when you're educating kids at the secondary and elementary level. So you have to give an overview in terms of identifying those pieces and parts of history that you want to emphasize for an overview purposes. Unfortunately, as a result, you end up with three potential problems. First, whatever information you focus on, invariably you're going to leave something out. Think about it. Anytime you're trying to distill a lot of information and you're trying to pick in your mind what you should focus on, when you bring something in and you say, this is what we want to bring to the attention, the reality is that anything you present means that you had to make the decision that something couldn't be presented at that time, which then leads me to my second point. Whenever you focus on something and not others, you may inadvertently or inadvertently send a message as to what information is important. Think about it. If you're talking about a collective amount of history and there are so many different parts, you may not be expressly saying that this information is not as important, but you may be sending the signal that since this is what I want you to focus on, I am going to exclude everything else as not being as important. Which brings me to the third point. The information selected by the individual may be unconsciously biased towards a person's perspective. So what ends up happening is that when somebody is presenting a large amount of information and they pick what information they believe is important, they may unknowingly be creating a bias towards information that they believe is relevant based on their own perspective, which may inadvertently result in excluding other parts that are equally as important. Which brings me to today. As I give you one example of how something historic, which can be taught in two different ways, can result in two different impressions. Today, I want to talk about the historic abolitionist, John Brown, and how he was taught at a Southern school, and I as a Southern student, and one of my friends who was from New York City, and how he was taught in a Northern school.
In the know.
Good evening, everyone.
In the know.
Tony Reeves, following the news in any way, shape, or form. No shortage of things to talk about.
What did it mean? What will it bring?
This is a reality we simply have to accept.
Tony Reeves,
go ahead and get started.
For those of you who don't know John Brown was an avid supporter of freeing the slaves during the slave owning years, or he was referred to as what's called an abolitionist, and he was in existence during the 1800s. He is most widely known for his effort to incite a slave rebellion at what's known as Harper's Ferry, preceding the American Civil War. As a result of his actions, he was executed by hanging on December 2, 1859. Now, John Brown believed that he was an instrument of God and that it was his mission to end slavery. Now, anytime you're looking at a historical figure, there's always going to be competing impressions of how that individual is viewed. And John Brown was no different. There are countless debates surrounding whether he was a hero and a savior of the abolitionist movement to free slaves, or whether he was a maniac or insane in his pursuit of his actions. Now, we can all debate of the complexities of this individual. However, how he is presented in educational materials may have an impact on how he is perceived. Which brings me to a debate I have with a good friend of mine when I was in college, a good friend of mine from New York, about John Brown. Now, for context, I need you to paint the picture of two different individuals, and you probably can glean it fairly quickly. I grew up in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, which is a small rural town of about 40,000 people in the southeast corner of Arkansas, about an hour from Mississippi and Louisiana border. I grew up in what's referred to as the Deep South. When I was in junior high school, I can remember when I was taught about John Brown, I can remember him vividly being referred to as Mad John Brown. Mad in the sense of him being considered insane. I can also remember him being referred to as insane. I do remember having discussions about him and his John Brown's efforts to free the slaves. However, I do recall several accounts of him being referred to as being insane. Now, several years later, I attended college at a small liberal arts school in Florida and met up with this gentleman. I don't want to throw my boy's name out there. So it's interesting because he was from Manhattan, New York, and he was born and raised and educated there. And he and I would often have debates about a variety of different topics. But somehow one day we happened to find ourselves migrating towards this particular topic about John Brown. So we were having this discussion, and during this discussion, I distinctly remember referring to John Brown as Mad John Brown. And the thing that still resonates with me to this day was his response, because his first instinct was to stop me and say, "Why are you referring to him as Mad John Brown?" And so I told him that in my school, we were taught that he was insane, that he part of the insanity was the fact that he would seek to arm the slaves in rebellion and so forth. And so as such, that's how he was portrayed to me, and that's how he was taught to me. He was puzzled because he said to me, and I still remember him saying, "Why?" I'm like, "What do you mean by why?" And of course, you got to remember, I'm 19 at the time. So I'm like, this is really how he was taught. We were taught. He said in his school, John Brown was viewed as a hero and revered, and there is no reference to him being considered mad or insane. Even more so, my friend couldn't understand how I couldn't see John Brown as being for a hero for trying to take upon himself to liberate the slaves, and why I'd be willing to adopt this or adapt or accept this notion that he was insane because of this particular action. So you see how two different, very different perspectives of the same set of history can affect the perspective? And more importantly, how both are being taught. And this is literally, we're talking, both of us were in junior high in the early 80s. So this is literally how we are being communicated in our different parts of the country about a central figure, two totally different ways. The reality of this is that both portions of history can be true. However, if taught from a specific perspective without a wider context, you risk the possibility of someone adopting a version that doesn't consider all the nuances of the historical moment. In other words, you have an individual here who was clearly complex. And by only telling a portion of his narrative, what ends up happening is that you leave it up to the individual, i.e. the student, to not only develop their own impression, but also that impression cements over time if they're not willing to open up their eyes to the possibility that there could be a greater context other than what's being taught to them. Now, let's be clear about this, because this is something that comes up a lot. There is no right version of history. There are no facts or alternative facts. There is no history, and then there's an alternative history. No. The key thing is what portions of history are you telling? And is important, are you recognizing that omission of other facts may result in creating a distinct impression? You risk the possibility of someone drawing a conclusion that you never intended. In the case of my buddy and I, we were both taught history about John Brown from two different perspectives. He was taught of him as being a hero. I was taught of him as being a madman. The reality is that providing information that addresses both of those aspects would have given us a fuller picture of the complexities of the man. However, since we both came from different educational systems that selectively chose to emphasize certain aspects of John Brown, we each drew different conclusions about the individual. And as a result, we developed our own perspective based on that information, and we carried those perspectives from junior high into college life. And it's those perspectives that we have that we use to validate our perspectives. And unfortunately, if we're not open to adapting to an evolving expansion of the perspective, we may push back because those original perspectives are so deeply ingrained within us. Well, that's it for today with In the Know with Tony Reeves. Remember, the difficulty of distilling what parts of history should be taught may result in developing a perspective. And the problem is that if you hold on to that perspective as if nothing can be added or taken away from it, you may resist the reality that history is not a fixed set of facts, and that as our understanding of history evolves, so does our reality that we know more as we learn more. As always, I thank you, our listening audience, for tuning in. If you have Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, type in my handle and follow me. My name is Reeves, for more interesting content and more thought-provoking information going forward. I'm Tony Reeves, and always make sure you're in the know. And remember, are you ready for the Anthony Reeves experience?